Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The political storm swirling around the sale of U.S. port facilities to an Arab-owned company has united Republicans and Democrats in a Casablanca movie moment. We're shocked, they say, that President Bush would allow Arab ownership of these terminals. Never mind that almost a third of all port facilities in the U.S. are already foreign-owned, or that port security would remain in the hands of the U.S. Coast Guard and Customs officials. Amidst charges of xenophobia, the row puts President Bush at odds with leaders of his own party. But in the end, it does nothing to improve security at U.S. ports, which a former Coast Guard commander calls a house of cards. Up next on Point, the sound and the fury and the politics of U.S. port security. We begin in Washington today with the political storm. David Sanger is White House correspondent for The New York Times. David, thanks for joining us. Always good to have you.
Thank you, Anthony. Good to be here.
Bring us up to date. Where does this debate about port security and foreign ownership of U.S. port facilities stand today? What's new?
Well, after a lot of back and forthing yesterday, I would say that, the White House has moved to a position of admitting some error, not on the substance, but on their failure to notify Congress in advance. Now, their failure to notify Congress was, in fact, sort of derivative of their failure to notify themselves. It turns out that the president did not know of this approval, which had happened down at sort of the mid-levels of the U.S. government, nor did Secretary Rumsfeld, nor did the Treasury Secretary, John Snow, by their own accounts, until this weekend when there were news accounts of it. But what's interesting about this is the core of the White House's argument is foreign ownership was decided long ago. This is not an American company being sold to a company based in...
It's a British company.
It's a British company. And in your lead-in, I heard the mayor of Baltimore saying, you know, we wouldn't have the ports in the city that was home of the Star-Spangled Banner being sold to a foreign company. Well, my recollection from school days is that the Star-Spangled Banner was written during a battle with the British,
who
had been running his port for the past 30 or 40 years.
You pointed out, David, in your piece today, that most experts agree that the gaping holes in port security, which seems about just about everybody acknowledges are there, has little to do with the nationality of the companies running them. So if that's the case, what's this debate in Washington really about?
Well, to some degree, Anthony, it's something of a proxy debate. I think there are sort of two things going on here. There are Democrats who see an opportunity to be more hawkish on Homeland Security here than the president is. There are Republicans who see some room to separate from the president in a way that they haven't found a way to do on Iraq or other issues that they may privately be quite concerned about, but they couldn't break free, and this is a quite popular, easy-to-explain issue in an election year. But it's also a proxy debate for all of the things that have not happened in the realm of port security, and it's a way for the critics to make their point there, and a lot has not happened. At the end of that same story you referred to, I noted that of the six ports we're discussing right now, only one has a working radiation detector. These are the detectors that the trucks would go through on their way out of the port after unloading the ships, delivering their goods. It would be your last line of defense to detect whether there was nuclear material on one of the trucks.
Yeah. What's strange, though, David, is people aren't, I mean, you say it's a proxy debate, and I agree with that. It's strange that people aren't separating themselves from the president or sort of establishing their own points about the need to improve port security. I mean, again, foreign ownership isn't part of the debate about improving port security. No one is sort of saying that up front and out in the open.
It's funny. It's their wedge into it, because the foreign security part of it seems like a very approachable, politically saleable way to do. So you're sort of in the, we've had the tables reversed here. A president who usually likes to speak in black and white terms about security issues is suddenly taking a far more nuanced position. And Democrats in particular, who have usually taken the more nuanced position on what our approach to this should be, in other words, how we should focus on public diplomacy and non-military approaches and all that, are suddenly taking the more typical White House position.
Very interesting. Finally, David, is it possible that all this huffing and puffing about this particular sale will actually lead to a serious discussion about how to improve security at U.S. ports, which just about everybody agrees we have to have?
If it did, it wouldn't be an all bad thing.
Right.
The question is, how does the conversation turn from one to the other? And there's a lot to discuss in the huge gaps in port security. I mean, only 4 or 5% of all shipments are, for example,
that's right,
inspected right now. But for now, it looks like the White House is in a position where it's basically going to have to take a longer look at the ownership issue, because they took some shortcuts, didn't notify Congress, didn't go through the whole process that the law would seem to suggest you'd have to go through. Mm-hmm. And it is hard to imagine right now how the president could buck both Democrats and Republicans in Congress who say, at a minimum, let's take a longer look at this. But the president was asked about that this morning and showed no sign of backing down.
David Sanger, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate your perspective, as always.
Thank you, Anthony.
White House correspondent for the New York Times, David Sanger. We're joined now by Kurt Weldon. He's Republican congressman from Pennsylvania, serving in his 10th term. Congressman Weldon is vice chairman of the Homeland Security Committee and founder of the Homeland Security Caucus. Congressman Weldon, thanks for joining us this morning.
It's great to be with you.
I'd like to have your take on this sale. What you have grave concerns about it. Tell me why.
Well, first of all, the way it was handled in this atmosphere where everyone is concerned for security for our people and our country, the White House has been, you know, really aggressively pursuing Congress on issues like the Patriot Act. You have a sale that they had to know was going to be politically explosive to a company with a majority interest ownership by another nation, an Arab nation. It should have been briefed. It should have had transparency. There should have been opportunities for members of Congress to understand the process.
But is that the only issue? I mean, if you had been briefed and had a chance to have things explained to you, do you think you could have accepted it? Because I don't hear Republicans and Democrats in Washington saying that at all. I hear them saying, you know, foreign ownership, Arab ownership, absolutely not.
Well, I don't know whether I could accept it in the end or not. I am a co-sponsor of the King-Schumer bill to block it and to look at it, but at a minimum, what we should not be doing is embarrassing a country that is working with us, the Emirates. Whether you agree with this or not, and I may well come down totally against it and oppose it under any circumstance, but in the process, what we've done here is we've managed to give the Emirates this feeling that we just don't want to be involved with them. That really has long-term significant implications. This reminds me of the case when President Clinton told the Chinese that he would not give a visa to Taiwan President Lee Dong-wei, and the Congress found out, and both houses overwhelmingly opposed that. Well, the Chinese and allowed Lee Dong-wei to come in.
Yeah.
The Chinese felt that was a deliberate slap in their face, and I think the Emirates are going to look at this and say, you know, we're being maligned by America, and this never should have happened. It happened because of miscommunication.
But isn't Dubai being maligned by the kind of very strong response from members of both parties that, again, are just saying foreign ownership is a bad thing, when in fact just about every expert in port security says the issue isn't foreign ownership, it's the fact that there are gaping holes and members of Congress and the administration aren't talking about them in substantive ways?
Well, it's partly that, but it's also the process of reviewing. There are foreign investments in our country all over the place, and it happens on a continual basis, and in most cases doesn't raise red flags. What I'm also looking at with my colleague, Democrat Bob Brady from Philadelphia, is whether or not we should legislatively put into place a requirement that Congress has some role in the process of looking at the investments that foreigners want to make here. Not just this commission or this committee, but also Congress plays a legislative role. That does not exist today.
Interesting. Congressman Weldon, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you.
We're talking about the politics of national security and the deal that gives an Arab-owned company control of facilities at 6 U.S. ports. Among the concerns expressed by Republicans and Democrats is this: the national security may not have been the highest priority of the group charged with vetting the deal. That group is called the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, which is run out of the Treasury Department. Yesterday, White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan responded to the charge.
You have some 12 departments and agencies that are involved in thoroughly reviewing such transactions and closely scrutinizing these transactions to make sure that it meets all national security concerns, to make sure that there is no national security threat. So this was a transaction that was closely scrutinized by the experts, by the counterterrorism experts, by the intelligence community, and those who are responsible for protecting the American people. No one in those departments objected to this transaction going forward.
Not long after McClellan's briefing, Democratic Senator Charles Schumer of New York told Fox News he wasn't buying the White House line.
The check that they did was a preliminary short check. It was done in secrecy. No one knew it was happening. It was done ahead of time. They almost never do this ahead of time. And I'll tell you one other thing. This committee has always had a proclivity, an inclination, to take economic issues and diplomatic issues ahead of homeland security issues. And if you look at who's on it, there are people, you know, the State Department, okay, they're concerned with diplomacy.
Treasury Department.
Treasury Department's okay. Concerned with economics.
But let's say,
is there a smoking gun? Do we know, Mr. So-and-so is the executive vice president? No. But it's just obvious that this should take more care, not less care, than the usual contract.
Joining me now in the studio in Boston is Juliet Kayyem, lecturer in public policy and homeland security expert at Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Juliet, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Anthony.
Appreciate you having you here. And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst and senior editor at The Atlantic Monthly. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Anthony. Hello, Juliet.
Juliet, let me start with you. What do you make of what's going on in Washington? It's all about the politics, isn't it?
I think any security expert, it's not about the security. Let's just put it that way.
That's
I think David Sanger is right, that this has almost nothing to do with either what's actually coming in on the cargo, who is being employed at these ports. I mean, this is a proxy debate. And so I agree with David Sanger, but I would add that there's an additional proxy here. In many ways, this feels like Hurricane Katrina Part 2, because in the background of this debate over the Treasury Secretary and the Committee on Foreign Investment is really, truly the Department of Homeland Security and its agenda for securing America. So, which basically I think we all saw in August, unfortunately, not much, right? That there is no agenda for what it means to have secure ports. So eventually, I believe, and you know, this comes a week after the House report on Hurricane Katrina. Today, the White House releases its own report. So there's an additional sort of member of the debate, the Department of Homeland Security, that I think is not going to fare very well as this plays out the next couple of weeks.
So when you say the focus isn't on Homeland Security, the idea is that the focus is on a business deal when it should be on how to make the port secure, and considered.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, if we're going to have a debate about port security, which we should, it should be about why one of the six major ports in the U.S., only one of the major ports in the U.S. has a working radiation detector, right? That seems to me to be of greater concern. What is, in fact, in these ships? Right now, the way we divide security in the cargo community is trustworthy, untrustworthy. If we know the company, what's in the cargo bay is trustworthy. And if we don't know the company, we'll take an extra look. There's something else on this hearts and minds issue that Kurt Weldon brought up. For those of us who travel in the Middle East, I was in Dubai twice last year. It's hard for me sitting here not to believe that there are racial, even though I disagree with the Bush administration on many things, that there are racial overtones or undertones to what's going on here, at least in terms of it being a triggering event. And that I think is a concern. But the idea that the Bush administration is now arguing that this is hurting our hearts and minds, our public diplomacy debate, is kind of odd from an administration that gave us Guantanamo Bay and Abu Ghraib. But it's also odd in the sense of where UAE stands in the Arab world. I mean, Dubai is Disneyland on steroids. I mean, it is not reflective of the hearts and minds campaign we actually want to have in the Arab world. I mean, it's a small country. It has no politics. It's rich beyond belief. But this isn't the public diplomacy campaign that we really should be concerned about.
Interesting. I want to use part of this hour to talk about what actually has to happen at U.S. ports, because I think that is, you know, David Sanger said it, that there's a sort of proxy debate and proxy discussion about what's really going on here. U.S. ports have been described as part of the soft underbelly of the U.S., the part of the country that is most vulnerable to terrorist attack. Why is that? What's the biggest and most obvious fear?
the economics of it. I mean, it's clearly, when you look at just the numbers of cargo that come in, if you disrupt, for example, the port in Baltimore, the impact, the economic impact it would have. I mean, and so don't even imagine a nuclear device, which would have the impact of a major terrorist event and casualties. Just imagine closing that port for 3 days. Mm-hmm. The economic impact across the across the Northeast and the Midwest would be indescribable. I mean, it would put 9/11 to shame. And I think that that's sort of the biggest concern. Secondly, of course, is because only 5% of the stuff is being inspected, I don't know, the number can't be 100%. We certainly know that. But between 5% and 100%, there's a big gap in terms of we have no knowledge of what's coming in these bays, and we have no good way of tracking it. The argument now, and I think Customs has gotten better about it, to be fair, is you want to check this stuff before it gets into our ports, right? So we have customs officials all throughout the globe at these major exporting facilities trying to look in and figure out what's going on. The UAE has U.S. customs officials there as well.
Jack Beatty, I want to get you in on this discussion. This whole thing, getting back to the political piece of this, sort of puts the president in an awkward situation, to say the least, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I mean, let's just look at his situation for a minute. Parlous is the word for it. He's above 50% in only six states and barely above there. He's 33 points below where Bill Clinton was when he left office. His vice president is below the Mendoza line. Meanwhile, you have scandal after scandal. You've got the burning fuse of Abramoff. You've got the warrantless wiretaps and so on. And the president is in danger of losing 15 seats in the House of Representatives. According to roll call, 9 of the top 10 most vulnerable seats held by Republicans. That matters crucially to Bush, because if conservative voters are demoralized, they won't turn out to vote. This could well demoralize them. That happened to Democrats in 1994 when Clinton was unable to go ahead with health care reform. Democrats stayed home. If that happens this year, Bush is in trouble. The Republicans are in trouble, but so are Bush, because, as roll call recently pointed out, impeachment could well be on the ballot. And all but ignored, Zogby poll last month found that by 52-43, Americans want Congress to consider impeaching Bush, quote, if he wiretapped American citizens without a judge's approval, which he has. And if the Democrats win, the John Conyers of Detroit, Michigan, becomes the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and almost certainly he would at least hold hearings. So Bush is entirely, his future is wrapped up with keeping that majority. This kind of thing, yeah, along with the guest worker program, is precisely the sort of thing that will keep conservatives at home, because they have a strong nationalist element in their voting.
But Jack, are Democrats looking any better in this? I mean, you know, the Chuck Schumers and the Hillary Clintons coming out and screaming about foreign ownership of ports, when, you know, there is an opportunity here to talk about what really has to happen to improve port security. I mean, I guess from where I sit, I don't see this reflecting very well on either party.
Well, I'm sure that's true. But, you know, but let's get right down to the root of it. Why are the ports not why hasn't more been done there? Well, as I understand it, if you go back and look at this, there was a proposal to actually tax cargo coming in and out of ports, and the maritime industry lobbied and said, oh, no, we can't have that, just as the chemical industry lobbied, so we don't have really adequate protection at chemical plants, the nuclear industry. The point is, In significant respects, Bush remains the 9-10 president. Mm. His policy is, we're going to fight the war on the offense, and he has neglected the defense. I mean, the 9-11 Commission has said that. Study after study has documented it, and this just brings that out in relief.
James is calling from Washington, D.C. Hello, James.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
Good. You know, I just wanted to say that this is such thinly veiled racism, and you know, opposition to this takeover by Dubai. I mean, this is going to cause more problems in the Middle East than any cartoons did. This is going to do far more damage to our reputation internationally. And I don't understand, you know, I don't understand even the nature of the opposition other than racism.
Mm. President Bush was definitely suggesting that in some of the comments he's made. Do you believe in the president's, do you agree with the president on this issue?
Yeah, I really do. To be perfectly honest, I'm scared to death when I agree with the president, but I do. I don't see how this is going to do anything but damage our credibility. And it's a global economy. I don't see what, you know, what the ownership of an international company in a global economy really means. It just seems absurd to me.
Well, I want to talk about the specifics of that as we move forward in the hour. And, James, I thank you for the call. It's a great point. Let me bring one more voice into this discussion. J. Christian Bowlidge. He's joining us from Miami, Florida. He's the mayor of Elizabeth, New Jersey. He's a Democrat. The Newark Elizabeth Port is the world's largest container ship port and the largest foreign trade zone in the United States. It's one of the six ports that is affected by this deal with the United Arab Emirates. And Mayor Bowlidge, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Anthony. It's nice to be here.
You're down there with a bunch of other mayors in Miami. I'd love to know what the buzz is. What are they saying?
Well, we've been talking about the mayor, especially the mayor of Miami and some of the other port cities, and they don't understand why the president will not allow an open and public discussion to find out exactly what the security measures are on this port situation.
Interesting. Well, tell me.
The mayors would probably like to know exactly what the process was the federal government went through, and so we can understand it better.
So that's really, do you have sort of reflexively, though, a problem with the idea of the port in Newark being foreign, some of the facilities in the port of Newark being foreign-owned? Is that a problem for you?
Absolutely. In a post-9/11 world, there needs to be the utmost security. Mayors were not brought into this discussion. We were never consulted to be told that a foreign entity was going to now run the ports. Currently, about 5% of the containers are inspected. Does that increase or decrease with a foreign-owned port stevedoring operation? It's a real serious issue. I used to work out at the ports back in the 1980s, and I understand the lack of security then as compared now into a post-9/11 world.
But Mayor Bowlidge, from the research that I've done, and it's been widely reported, about a third, 30% or so of U.S. ports around the country are foreign-owned. I mean, is this an issue because it is Arab, it would be Arab-owned?
That's become the political issue.
Right.
And for a White House that has prided itself on an imperial presidency and a political issue, and one that has taken Saddam Hussein out of power because of democracy, it's ironic that this president will not even listen to leaders of his own party in the Republican-controlled House and Senate, who clearly say they're going to pass legislation, and he will override it. I find that unconscionable that this political president is not even listening to leaders of his own party.
Juliette Kayyem, you have your hand up. I'd love to bring you into this discussion.
I think the mayor brings a good point. The veto that Bush is threatening, what is that about? I mean, the fact that this president has never done a veto.
Right, and it would be his first.
He's going to veto on this issue. And there's a lot of theories that you can imagine. One is he wants to protect the process. In fact, maybe he doesn't want a big review of the process if corners were cut. He may want to protect globalization. This may be his attempt to say, no, I'm going to stand up for Arab globalization as I do stand up for European or Chinese globalization. But there is a subtle, I think there might be another subtle issue going on here. This is a president who believes in issues related to national security that there is no or a limited role for Congress. So this is, I think, Congress and the president, two branches of government going head to head about whether Congress can regulate or legislate in national security affairs. We saw this in the torture debates. We saw this in the detention debates. We saw this in the signing statement that Bush did when he signed the McCain anti-torture amendment, where he basically said, yes, I'm signing this, but I'm going to ignore it under my imperial presidency authority. This administration views congressional oversight of national security decisions as, I would say, a lot of them argue that it's basically unconstitutional. And that's just wrong. I mean,
well, that's the crux of the issue, and I think that's why the press is up in arms, is because this issue, if the president does not back off and at least study this for the next 30 or 45 days, you're going to see Republicans around the country running for Congress who are going to either look for shelter. This is an issue that Democrats are going to run right up the middle on between now and November. And I think that's a real concern for the Republican Congress.
Mayor Bowlidge, I'd love to talk to you just specifically about one issue, and that is, you know, the Port of Newark. What needs to happen there to make it safe? I mean, I'm sure this is an issue that's crossed your desk. What's the big glaring gap there in national security?
Well, the issue has always been an inspection of containers, and right now there's between 5 and 12% of the containers are inspected. If the President and the Congress really want to inspect containers and prepare security, we start putting American citizens in foreign ports and have the containers and the cargo inspected on an easy pass type system where we lock and load the containers in the foreign port, and then it's transported to the United States of America. And at that time, there would be no threat of nuclear material getting into these containers. And until the Congress and the President are willing to make that financial commitment, it's going to be real difficult to inspect these containers to the rate of 90 to 100%.
Mayor Bullage, thank you for joining us. I'm very grateful that you took time to speak with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. J. Christian Bullage is the Democrat, is the Democratic mayor of Elizabeth, New Jersey, and the that oversees the Newark Elizabeth Port, which is the world's largest container ship port and the largest foreign trade zone in the U.S. It's also one of the six ports that would be affected by the deal with the United Arab Emirates. Mark is calling from Acton, Massachusetts.
Good morning. I've heard it repeatedly stated, as you just did, that there are six ports affected. But I have seen reporting that there are two additional ports in Texas, Beaumont and Corpus Christi, that handle 40% of the Army cargo that go to Operation Iraqi Freedom. Is it true that those two ports are affected?
Juliet, a specific question about two additional ports that might be involved here. Do you have an answer?
I have a speculative answer. What we do know is that the contract involved the six ports we're just talking about, the contract with UAE. Mm-hmm. The two additional ports may be up for bidding. And what Mark may have heard is that this company, the same company, the Dubai and company, may have put a bid in for it. But my understanding is that those ports are not affected by this current contract, although clearly this is going to resonate with any future decision about foreign ownership of ports.
That's true. And these aren't just any foreigners. I don't like xenophobia, and I certainly don't think we should be offending the Arab world, certainly right now. But, you know, I'm looking at a headline from the Washington Post, 2002. Al-Qaeda's road paved with gold. Secret shipments traced through a lax system in United Arab Emirates. Freedom House, the human rights organization, labels this country, its lowest label, not free, the lowest category it gives. The country was deeply involved in the BCCI scandal of the 90s, which had a trail of corruption leading around the world. If you look on the CIA website, you'll find, perhaps not today, but last night, that this country is a transfer place for drugs and very vulnerable to money laundering on that score. And of course, we're reading in all the papers about its role in the AQ Khan network of spreading nuclear weapons and technology around the world. So this just isn't any country. And it's a country that was involved with the Taliban. It is now, the citizens there are now joining in the boycott against Danish products. They do not recognize Israel. So I think there's a lot of reason to be worried about this particular country getting involved in it.
Jack, let me throw out, a couple of sort of on the other hands here. The Bush administration makes the point that United Arab Emirates has been a willing participant in the war on terror. They also said in 2002 they captured an al-Qaeda leader who helped organize the attack on the USS Cole. There have been other arrests as well. So your point is taken, but I just want to sort of throw that in there from defenders of UAE that, they're part of – they're supposed to be on our team. So,
And they have troops in Iraq. I mean –
they have troops in Iraq.
I mean, I think Jack is right about sort of focusing on this country. I don't – but – the litany that he described could also, apply to Germany and France as well. I mean, what I think clearly triggered it is people actually probably had, a lot of people probably had never heard of the UAE before this week, didn't know it was a series of emirates, didn't know about Dubai. I mean, certainly Jack did. And I think this sort of lack of familiarity, not just having to do with the fact that they're Arab, but I just think a country over there in that part of the world was likely a trigger for this concern.
Part of Bush's whole effort is to sort of include these sorts of countries in the long term and the spread of democracy and make them sort of part of our world. Globalization is doing that. It does send a strange message.
It is a strange message. I mean, as I had said earlier, it's a strange message because this administration has probably done more harm in terms of Arab U.S. relations than good. But the UAE's, the perspective of the UAE within the Arab world, there is a sense that they're doing it right in some ways. I mean, clearly they're not politically free, but that here is a country, very small, so it can't really apply across the Arab world, but people are rich, comfortable, there's no violence, and the rest of the Arab world looks at the UAE with awe and, I would say, envy and even jealousy. I mean, if you look at the Arab press, there's a little bit of glee that this is happening to the UAE, because the UAE is somewhat cocky within the Arab world. So this is a very complex series of relationships within the Arab world, and the UAE is not really reflective, I think, of a lot that's going on in the Arab world, or what we should probably be concentrating on, or the countries we should be concentrating on.
Let's go to Kent, who's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hello, Kent.
Hi. I hear almost no one on any program talking about the appointment of Dave Sanborn, who was the chief executive officer for Dubai Port in charge of European operations, and he was appointed by George Bush in January as United States Maritime Administrator. And aside from the obvious conflict of interest, it bumps up against the White House story that President Bush didn't know about this until a few days ago. It would have come up in conversation, obviously.
Very
I'll
interesting.
My response off here.
Ken, thanks for the call. Jack Beatty, what do you? What can you add to that?
I was going to get to that. That is odoriferous. I mean, my gosh, you talk about a conflict of interest, and that really.
Well,
I
lay
think,
it out because Ken sort of brought it up as a second reference. I think it'd be helpful to a lot of listeners to just lay it out here.
This fellow, from what I understand, was one of the people who made this decision about whether to go ahead with this, and he works for this company, or he has worked for this company. So it essentially it's like approving a contract to your own employer. Of course, he wasn't the only one. But, you know, this it gets at the issue of what's going on behind the curtain. And one of the things that's going on is a free trade deal. For 2 years now, our free trade man, Zelik, has been trying to get a bilateral deal with the UAE. And this, I think if you pull that curtain up a little bit, that's what's involved here. They want a quid pro quo, and they saw this as a great thing they could do, prove this, do it in an accelerated way, and get that free trade deal. Well, who's going to benefit from that free trade deal? Our financial services industries, our oil industries, our corporate interests, all of whom are major contributors to the Bush campaign. So, you know, I think that they don't want to look behind the screen because that's when you're going to see things like Sanborn. You're going to see this stuff about the free trade pact, and it's not going to look very good.
Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Chester, New Jersey. Hello, Mike.
How you doing, sir?
Very well. What's
good.
On your mind?
I don't even know where to begin, to tell you the truth. I think that this has nothing to do with security whatsoever. I think it's just a slap in the face to everybody who's American, our soldiers. It's ridiculous.
Say more about that. How so? How a slap in the face?
Well, I mean, not to sound racist or anything, but I mean, the Arab world doesn't like us. It's the bottom line. You can see any protest in any Arab country, and there's an American flag burning. Mm-hmm. And now we're giving them our security? It's ridiculous.
I see. So you're concerned about the idea of an Arab-owned company running U.S. ports?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Totally. All you need is one person, one nut, to put something in the container, and that's what it's going to be.
But Juliet Kayyem, I mean, Mike, thanks for the call, and you raise an important point, and I think a lot of people agree with you. But in this world of time of globalization, this is a company that... there was a British company that sold these port facilities to this Arab-owned company in Dubai. Couldn't one just as easily say, my God, there are fundamentalists in Great Britain. All you have to do is look at the subway bombings. Why are we letting any foreign interest control our ports?
I think that is really where the debate is heading. When Mike says it was a slap in the face, I thought he was heading somewhere else on that comment because I think what is maybe animating some of this debate is this recognition that the U.S. can't do it or isn't big enough, strong enough, rich enough to do this, and that actually in a competitive bid, whether it was the UAE or wherever else, it went to a foreign country. And I think that sort of rising concern about whether the U.S. actually can get its act in order, whether Department of Homeland Security can actually get its act in order. So I think Mike raises an important point about sort of what it says about the U.S. that we can't do it.
But again, in this, you know, in this time of globalization, right. I mean, are we getting to the point?
It's a two-way street. Yeah. I mean, that's what's sort of silly about this argument. I mean, who cares where the headquarters of this company? This company is. It is a conglomerate. It's this. You know, it's the same as GE in China, which it is right now. I mean, these conglomerations, big corporate mega companies are everywhere. It does not matter where their home base is, and they employ people from all sorts of countries. The security issue is about the Coast Guard and Customs. It is about who is working at these facilities, which is not going to change under this new contract. It's still going to be mostly unionized local workers. And it's about what's going on abroad, which isn't Dubai. These containers are getting filled all across the world and coming here.
Julia, let me... go ahead, Jack.
Well, it's just kind of, Julia, what about the... You keep saying this company, but isn't it a country? As I understand it, this is a... What's the relationship here? Isn't the country the main owner of the company?
Yes, it is. I mean, but then that's, I guess, to describe Dubai, the country, the head of Dubai... or the head offices are called the executive offices. I mean, Dubai doesn't have a government in the way that we think of having a government because basically it cedes a lot of its governmental powers to the UAE. So Dubai is basically a corporation. Its head is known as a chief executive officer. It's essentially its cabinet members are called the executive offices. So it's a hard comparison to make to say, well, it's the equivalent of a U.S.-owned company. But it's true. The UAE is... So I guess I would say it's a hard comparison to make, I think, in the context of Dubai.
Let me throw one idea that I saw in the paper this morning at you, Juliet. And this was an opinion piece in today's Time from Clark Kent Irvin. And he's a former inspector general of the Homeland Security Department. His concern is this. He says it's true that security would remain in the hands of the Coast Guard and U.S. Customs officials. But he also points out that they only inspect, and as has been pointed out many times on this program, a small percentage of the containers. And he says the Coast Guard would merely set standards, review security plan, but it's up to the port operators to meet those standards, even higher security officers in some cases.
Right. And I mean, I think Clark's point is fair, but there's no reason to believe that those standards are going to change under this contract. I think Jack has been right. We need to look at the process that got us here, because I think there's enough fishy stuff coming out that suggests that we should be concerned about the standards. But the idea that the operator of the port is going to be able to change the standards is not true. The people at the port are not changing. Mm-hmm. And our big concern should be what is getting onto these cargo bays over there.
Right.
And can we get more cooperation from countries like the UAE and elsewhere, get more customs officials there and make sure that these ships, you know, here's one example. We don't have a universal radar system to track ship movement. I mean, unlike the air traffic controllers, where we know where every plane is at any given moment, we don't have the equivalent for ships. That seems odd to me.
That does.
Right, exactly. And easily fixable. But as Jack pointed at the beginning, this administration and Congress, to be fair, have viewed Homeland Security as a federal initiative with no additional money needed. They will tax no one. They don't tax the American public. They're asking almost nothing of us. And they certainly won't tax the industries, which they've barely done.
Jack Beatty, we have 30 seconds left. I'd like to give the last word to you up there in Hanover, New Hampshire. Final word on this great debate raging about Homeland Security today in the U.S.
Well, it's the political thing that gets me. I mean, Bush bowed to conservative pressure from opinion makers on Harriet Myers. And if this continues, I think he's probably going to do the same thing here. I don't know. I mean, that would be my guess, just simply because when they start to figure it out, if they lose the House, he is in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to get conservative voters out there. And this is just the kind of thing. You know, Bush in the last election carried white people with less than a college education by 22 points. He carried white men by less than college by 27 points. These kind of folks think of America, you know, in terms of strength and the nation and this sort of thing. And I don't say they're xenophobic, but they're very suspicious of this kind of deal. Mm. And you don't want to demoralize that kind of, culturally populist voter.
Jack Beatty, On Point News Analyst, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Juliet Kayyem, lecturer in public policy and homeland security at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Anthony.
Great pleasure having you. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.